Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to another year, hopefully a full year of the Sports Weekender. Happy New Year, everyone, 2026, and I'd like to extend to everyone a very happy New Year, and hopefully it's a good 2026. You know, it's been we've had a tough whole year of it, but a new year, new beginnings. Anyway, before I go any further, we'll just give you a quick update from the darts. And at this stage, Luke Littler is up 4-1 in the semi-finals against Ryan Searle. So he looks probably likely to go to another World Darts Championship final. Auckland weather for today. And today it is partly cloudy. Isolated shower, more widespread and heavier from afternoon with thunderstorms possible. Easing late westerlies. We have a high of 22, a low of 15, currently 18 at the moment. Tomorrow looks like a real humdinger. But fine, southerlies easing in the evening, a high of 25, a low of 16. And so we're going to kick it off. I done a pre-record yesterday on the Ashes. Now, this segment is brought to you by Father Ted's Original Irish Pub. They're based at 1 Wellesley Street West in the Auckland CBD. They have a selection of local craft and international draft beers on tap, a selection of bottled beers, fine wines, good spirits, great food. Great food and music on Wednesday through to Sunday. So make Father Ted your location to go to. Their number is 09-377-3142, or you can email them fatherteds@hotmail.com. Well, we kick off the year with an interview I conducted yesterday with the legend of Australian broadcasting, Jim Maxwell. And Jim has been the ABC league commentator for a number of years in cricket, and he is going to give us his opinion on this Ashes series. So we'll just get to that now. Welcome everyone to the Sports Weekend. A very, very happy new year. Well, the series that really was going to capture the imagination of probably the Australian public, also the New Zealand public, has been the Ashes. Well, it's already over. Australia retained the Ashes. We go into a fifth test with it being at 3-1. Here to join us is a legend of Australian broadcasting. He's ABC's cricket commentator and a fantastic commentator at that too. Happy New Year to Jim Maxwell.
It's lovely to be with you on the show. I was just speaking to Gordon Bray this morning.
How was Mr. Bray?
Sydney Hobart. He's one of your clients, isn't he?
Oh, he is. Yes. And I actually asked him the highlight of the year, and I said, before you even start, Gordon, I know coming on my show has really been great. Gordon is one hell of a fantastic man, and I have to say, I remember he ended up coercing yourself and Mr. Chappell to say a few words about the World Test Championship the last time to appear on my show. But looking at the series, Jim, I have to say Australia have proved to be very dominant. There's been some great performances. Mitchell Starc, Travis Head, you've got to look at Adam Cleary, and you've also got to look at Scott Boland. England at times has shown glances, but probably the big talking point has really been some of the pitches. Obviously, England winning in Melbourne, finished on the second day, and probably was a day and a half test. Then we look at the first one in Perth, and it lasted 2 days. And then most of the other two tests have went into day four, one has gone into day five. You know, surely that has been the talking point, and probably the financial head Australian cricket has probably suffered.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that. They lost a fair bit of dough on those two tests. It's been great for Australian tourism, though. We've had a lot of English fans out here, and the interest at the ground and on radio, television has been extraordinary. But it hasn't really lived up to all the hype that was going on with baseball and the rest of it. I mean, the Poms really lacked preparation, and maybe they suffered from a bit of hubris, arrogance as well, in the way they tried to go about what they were doing, and it's come off badly. And that's against an Australian side that's really never been at full strength for any one of the matches in the series. So disappointing in many ways, but Stark, as you mentioned, has been just outstanding. He's 35. He's one of the most durable bowlers in the history of the game, over 400 wickets in Test cricket, and he's going to keep playing. So that's good news. Maybe not for New Zealand to come here next year, but he is remarkable. And Travis Head, when he goes, look out. Don't turn your eyes away, because he'll hit another four before you can blink.
And I have to say, Kerry, the wicketkeeper, I think he's been really, has come as a revelation in this Test series. Yep. His batting has been absolutely outstanding.
Well, he's been one of our best Test cricketers this year. He's taken around 50 dismissals. He's made a couple of hundreds, and I think he's averaging over 40. So, yes, that's one of the reasons why he's batting at sixth ahead of Cameron Green, because he's such a good player. But, yes, there have been a few standouts in the Australian side, but I must confess, watching them bat in Melbourne the other day, some of their batsmen are looking a bit out of nick, due for retirement, like Khawaja's just announced that he's going to retire. But, you know, Smith's been in okay form when he's played. Weatherall doesn't look a long-term proposition as an opener. Lavish Chahane seems to have lost his ability to score consistently. Cameron Green, is he going to be the great enigma forever, or is he going to turn up and start to do something more consistent than he's shown in this series? So quite a few question marks around some of the players in the Australian side, and England, well, outside of Joe Root, their batting has always looked a little bit here and there against what has been an Australian attack, very disciplined, but, you know, not having the power, the quality of the quartet who've been playing regularly for the last few years, without Cummins most of the time, Hazelwood not at all, and now Lyon out injured.
Yeah, well, it's funny you should say that. There was one of the notes I had down. I am looking at both these sides, and I'm looking towards the future. And, you know, Australia, this Australian side has probably been, and we will say it, this group of players have been one of the most dominant performers in all forms of the game, whether it's Test, One Day Internationals in 2020. And I'm looking at this now, it is an ageing side, and there would have to be some concerns. Potentially, obviously, Khawaja has retired. Will there be more retirements, you suspect? Do you suspect that, how long has Nathan Lyon really got to go there? You know, Mitchell Starc, 35, he's going to continue on. We just look at Steve Smith. Well, that is going to be the big question for me, Jim.
Yeah, look, there's some very good younger players on the fringe, but none of them are quite up to the level required of Test cricket. But at some point, as you suggest, with Smith now 36 and two bad soft tissue injuries in the last couple of years for Lyon, who's rising 38. So, yeah, there's got to be a question mark about them, and Cummins himself. There are a few there at the back end who'll probably get as far as the next Ashes tour in 2027. Yes, but we need to be looking for some other players, and I think that's a process the selectors are aware of, and need to make it work, because from August onwards, we're playing a lot of Test cricket in the next 18 months.
And I will say this to you, Jim, hallelujah. I have, no offence, I think I've had a gutful of 2020, to be honest with you, and my preference is Test cricket and the white ball game. But just speaking about Test cricket, I also have a look at the England squad, and there's probably, this will be, obviously, Brendan McCullum will probably step down at the end of the series here. He will concentrate
on... Well, I don't think he might be pushed. I don't think he's going to step down.
Well, I think... he'll be told to, I think he'll be given a quiet hint to maybe concentrate more on the white ball game, as we just said.
Maybe.
I'm looking at a Test cricket, and I'm looking at the changing face of Test cricket, like Australia, England. There's going to be, obviously, there'll be a few changes there heading towards the future. India, a very much changed Indian side now. It is, they're now beginning, they're in a bit of rebuild. That's the big three in cricket, Jim. Then, obviously, you've got to count South Africa, who are the World Test champions, and I have to say it's probably them and Australia are the form teams in Test cricket. And, of course, little old New Zealand now, we've just completed a Test series against the West Indies, and the person I always speak to, Garth Galloway, someone you know, we looked at Kane Williamson, and we probably thought, is this the last time we'll see Kane Williamson playing Red Bull cricket? And that's a concern we've got in this game. But the future, Test cricket's going to change, and I think we're going to see a new generation coming through. Who are some of Australia's new generation to look out for?
Well, Sam Constance has already been there, and he'll probably come back in the next year or two in some guise. I'm not sure, as I said, about Weatherald as an opener. There's a young guy called Kellaway from Victoria who looks a very promising batsman. These guys have just got to pound out a few more runs in first-class cricket when they get the chance. That guy Short, who plays for Victoria now, he's a very good white ball player, but I think he could be even excellent value in the Test arena. And, you know, there are other guys around who are sort of on the edge of it that just need a bit more time to mature. Even Matt Renshaw might get another chance at the age of 31, 32. He's been a very strong scorer for Queensland in the Shield. So there are some fellas around, but we're going to lose a bit of quality and experience all of a sudden, and that may take a while to build up to something as strong as it's been.
Absolutely, and I'm just, when we turn our attention to this final Test now, obviously the groundsman will be under a lot of pressure at the SCG because obviously of the fallout because of what happened at the MCG. But looking at the day now, it's usually a very, very special day. Glenn McGrath's wife. It's a special day for her, as we know, she died of cancer. But
the pink ball test match, they call it. Yeah. It has slightly overtaken the test match, I must say, in the last few years, and quite often because it's been able to, as the series has been over. But you know, it's about 15 years now that we've had the pink ball test, which started out as a very good idea for a good cause and still is, but I just wonder whether it's time for someone else to come in and take up that spot. But there it is. It's a very strongly supported cause, with the spectators throwing a lot of money in, and they've broadened the franchise for the care of those suffering from cancer beyond just the breast cancer. So that's probably a good thing. It's just a splendid occasion for a lot of people here. The Sydney Test match, which a bit like Boxing Day, has taken up this spot for the last 30 years.
And I have to say, straight after New Year's Day, and it's, you know, you would have a lot of the revelers in Sydney looking at the fireworks, and I have to say, you know, like, I am hoping to be there next year for the New Zealand Test against Australia, and I'm hoping that, you know, we've got a competitive side against your mob, Jim, and obviously you'll be catching up. You'll probably have your good friend Brian Waddle, you'll probably be catching up with there next year.
Yes, I'm looking forward to all of that, and the way the two teams are going, it could be a very, very good series. You've got some players coming through, and
Absolutely.
That's pleasing to see, and you've got a few old hands that are still churning out buckets of runs, so that's important.
Yep.
We look forward to that battle for the Trans-Tasman Trophy.
Absolutely, and I have to say, Always enjoy chatting to you, Jim, and I always enjoy your honesty. Obviously, what did he get up to on New Year's Eve? Was it a very quiet one for Jim Maxwell?
It was, just at home. I watched the fireworks on TV, although I can see them outside the window. Yes, it's 1996, I think it started, the fireworks in Sydney. So it's been going for a long while, and I've seen a few of them on the harbour, and yeah, it's good fun and all the rest of it, but no, I'm just going quietly. I've got the little caboodle right next to me now. He's having a snooze.
Oh, brilliant, Andy. Yeah, brilliant. Well, Jim, thank you so much for making yourself free. Obviously, we hope this test becomes a great test match, something we can all talk about. And
it's a raffle.
Pardon?
It's a raffle. The pitch is a raffle. The weather's a raffle. Anything could happen.
Well, that's Test cricket for you. Well, Jim, enjoy the rest of 2026. I've got no doubt you'll be hoping for a good performance by the Australian cricket team. Hoping for another much improved Wallabies team as well.
Yes, well, we always look forward to defeating the All Blacks, but it doesn't happen often enough.
Well, I tell you what, you came very close at Eden Park.
Yes. Oh, well, you've got your hands full with Scott Robertson running the side, I think.
I don't think he's going to be breakdancing for quite a while yet, but that's just between me and you, Jim. Jim,
the World Cup's coming up soon, so we're looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, we're not particularly happy about the draw of either country. We shouldn't be happy about that because we either play South Africa or England in a quarterfinal.
Yes, well, you can't have it easy all the time, you fellas. Come on.
Always love your honesty, Jim. Have a great 2026, and no doubt we'll be talking through the year. Thank you very much. Cheers, Jim.
Listen, Happy New Year. All the best.
Bye.
Sorry, guys, just had to put on the old cans. Hey, that was a great interview. So next up, we're going to have a chat to Rod Dixon.
See the truth when I look.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender. Wow, I have to say my next guest, well deserved. I had a great chance to talk to him on New Year's Eve. Well, I'll have to say this is that we had the New Year's Honours. They always come out on New Year's Eve, and I was so happy to see this. An officer of the New Zealand Order of Merit, that is what my next guest has received and well deserved, not only for his whatever he'd done on the track and on the road, but what he's done since then. And I think he's a great servant, and I'm looking forward to talking about the honour he's received. Also looking forward to talking a bit about his career. So, good morning, Rod Dixon, Officer of the New Zealand Order of Merit. Congratulations, Rod, and Happy New Year to you, mate.
Thank you very much. Very Happy New Year. I mean, the one thing is, we're still above ground and the sun is shining and it's all good.
Absolutely. Well, it was quite interesting when I was having a chat to you on New Year's Eve because, first of all, you know, like, you always know a month or two in advance. So, obviously, how did this medal come about?
Well, it was interesting because back in the 73-74, Sir Bill Rowling, the Prime Minister at that time, he suggested an MBE, and I said, no, I didn't really see any value, not so much value, but I don't see myself having that. And I don't really think being a member of the British Empire, I said, no, I'm a New Zealander. So I think, and then they came back with the idea next year, what about an OBE? And I said, oh, that doesn't sound good either. I said, that sounds like other buggers' efforts. So I don't think that went down very well. So I think they left me alone after that.
And when you think about it, I know there was another Dixon who probably got another honour. I think you told me a funny, you sent him an email saying it may have been the wrong Dixon got the wrong medal.
Well, I think Scott, they got it mixed up, I think. And of course, you know, I reached out when he was just little kid, you know, go-karts with a cushion underneath them. And so we've been great friends. And, of course, his wife, Emma, is a Welsh 800-metre runner, and that was just been an amazing journey. Great, great friendship.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's time to talk about Rod Dixon. Rod Dixon, the man, you were born in the Nelson area. You know, what attracted you to go to athletics instead of rugby or cricket?
Well, it was interesting because even in the primary school, I was... the thing in those days was that if you misbehaved, then the teacher would send you out for a run around the football field. And so, of course, he said to my mother one day, he said, now, I'm very concerned with young Rodney. He misbehaves every day. And she said, well, what do you do? And she said, well, I send him out for a foot round. And she said, no, don't send him. He loves running. He loves to go out there and run. That's why he misbehaves. Give him 100 lines. I will not misbehave. And sure enough, I didn't like writing 100 lines of I will not behave. So, of course, I behaved myself at the point. But he figured out very early that young Rodney wasn't born to sit down and keep quiet. You had to keep him moving. And he would often give me a note to take across to Mrs. Anscombe, a person on the other side of the school. 2 minutes over, 2 minutes back, no dawdling. Well, I could run right around the school in 2 minutes. So... And I'd come back in and he'd say, now, can you spell boat now, young Rodney? I said, I can spell Christchurch. What's your problem? So, but basically what it was is that kids are not born to sit down and keep quiet. They, you know, you've got to keep them moving. And that's the whole mission of what we're doing with the kids' marathon.
Absolutely, and of course, then you know you went into you from your teens. You were inspired by the Snells, the Helbigs, the John Davies. Went into athletics, and then you know had a bit of a rivalry with a guy called Tony Pohall, who was a very prominent 1500 meters runner. But then you were picked up. You were the Nelson Gardner, as Keith Quinn called you, and you were picked for 1972 along with Tony Pohall to compete in the 1500 metres. Also, your good mate Dick Taylor was there, but the games were really overshadowed by Black Saturday.
Yes, that was of course, you know, that was, well, I'd been to the World Cross Country in 71, so I had travelled, but I knew when we were going to the Olympics, and of course we ran a lot of track races in Scandinavia. It was just such an inspiring trip with all the great athletes, you know, Dick Taylor, my great mate, Graham Davey, who was our athletics manager, and of course we were in the village training every day, going to meet athletes from all around the world, very, very inspiring. And then that one night when we were under... I actually woke up in the morning and went onto the balcony, and I called out to Dick Taylor and I said, there's a guy over there with a balaclava on and a machine gun. And of course we didn't know what was going on. And then of course we were called, to assembly point, bring your passports, we have to evacuate. And then of course it all unfolded, tragically. And that was a huge impact on all the athletes. The IOC were thinking of closing the game, cancelling the games. But the Israelis said, don't you cancel the games. We live with this every day of our lives. And if we give in to terrorism, we will continue with it. And so we knew then we were going to run for the games, we were going to run for the future of the games, and we were going to run for the spirit of the Israeli athletes who lost their lives.
Absolutely. And then, of course, then you competed in your first Olympics, 1500 metres. You were so convincing in those heats. Now, I was only born in 72, but I'd done a bit of research there, Rod. But then it came down to the... final, obviously the great Kip Keno, the Kenyan runner, the big favourite, but there was a Finnish runner. I'm sorry, I forgot to write that down, but...
Pekka Vasala,
yeah. And Keith Quinn, I remember reading Quinny's book, and he said Tony Pohall, they knew about him, but he said he'd been watching a certain young Nelson Gardner, and he said, this guy's an outside bet to win a medal. And guess what? Quinny was right, as he always is. Bronze medal, really a fantastic race. You held off a rival, which ended up to be a good mate of yours, Mike Boyd.
Yes, yeah, Mike Boyd. We spent a lot of time in Europe together, 73, 74, 75. I mean, he was, and of course he came to New Zealand and ran. Mike Boyd was a real legend and a real inspiration to, alongside Kip Keino, to the all the Kenyan athletes.
And of course, bronze medal, you come back, you're a hero. And then, of course, then 2 years later, we get ready for another, for a Commonwealth Games in Christchurch, New Zealand. Now, Dixon had been doing some good stuff in the 1500 metres. But there was this other young fella from the Auckland area, a bloke called John Walker. Now, they lined up in that 1500 metres race, and there was a Tanzanian name by the name of Philbert Bayi, and there was Walker, and there was Dixon, and there was Ben Jipcho, there was Boyd, the whole lot. That was probably Graham Crouch from Australia. It was probably one of the best 1500 metres fields at that time. World record. Unfortunately, I think you finished fourth in that, and then but Walker and Bayi really stole the show of that and that race. And I must admit, you know, I think five of yous were all under the world record time.
Yes, well, that's, I mean, I must admit that was something that was just incredible. I was aware of the time, but what we were running. But I'm looking ahead, and there's Baie. And, of course, John Walker and I had travelled in Europe the year before, and I knew where the incredible talent and natural ability that John had, and it was only going to be a matter of time before he broke into the world scene with world records, etc. And, of course, we ran the race of our lives, and I remember standing next to Graham Crouch at the finish line, and I looked up and I said, hold on. I've just run the fifth fastest time in history and finished fourth in the race. And Crouchy looks at me and he says, and I've just broken Herb Elliott's world record at the time. And then we looked at, and I think the first seven of the athletes had all run national records. So it was the race of a lifetime.
Absolutely, and of course, 75, there was a three athletes who I think were trailblazers for New Zealand, and it was a great time. Dixon, Walker and Quacks, and, you know, you broke records, you won races, and then it was to the Olympics. Unfortunately, there was boycotts at the Olympics because our All Blacks decided to tour South Africa at that time, and we'll speak a bit later about the Prime Minister of the time. We won't now, but the African nations weren't there. But still, it was a competitive field. 1500, the 5000 meters, Lassie Verrin. Now, there's always been that rumor going around that there was blood doping involved with with him.
Yes, well, of course, Lassie said, no, it's reindeer milk. we knew what was going on. Us New Zealanders spent quite a bit of time in Finland and Veramäki, their training centre, and we could see what was going on. They were doing something with it was a science. We're sort of the science of performance improvement. We could see what was going on.
You know, but for that time, was it considered legal or was it illegal, you know?
So they didn't really, you know, the testing didn't know what was going on. As it is today, the samples doping is 10 substances ahead of control. So drug doping people didn't know what to look for. They didn't know what was going on, and obviously, if it was which was considered at that time blood doping, I mean, how do you test the blood, etc., etc. So there was a lot of confusion, and of course, there wasn't enough funding to have a set up properly. So a lot of the athletes, I mean, we know what was going on with the Eastern Bloc countries, Russia and East Germany. Mm. So that was our time that we had to try and deal with it. But unfortunately, athletics wasn't sophisticated enough to know what was going on.
Yeah, and in that race, yourself and your good mate, the late Dick Quacks, trying to chase down Lassie Verrin. Unfortunately, you just missed out on a bronze medal. Quacks got the silver, and then obviously you worked on distance running. Then we go to 1980. Now you were selected to go to Moscow, as was a number of athletes. And of course, what happens on Christmas Eve, Soviet Union invades Afghanistan. The US decide to boycott the Olympics, and New Zealand decides to follow suit. But you made a stand. You made a stand against the politicians because you basically just said, you know, this is not right. You know, these people have taken time off their jobs, and these were amateurs. They weren't basically they had to take leave from their jobs. Some of them had to go back and get another job when they get back, and then it was all boycotted. And you know, you made a stance about, hang on, well, keep the politics at it. Let us go to the Olympics.
Exactly. Yes, and I was it was very frustrating because I gave up my job to train specifically for it, and I had in those days there was no New Zealand Sports Foundation or New Zealand High Performance System, so really it was our expense. And here was the Prime Minister or the government taking away that. I'm sure they got compensated with new frigates or something, but we didn't get anything. And that disappointment and that, in a form of anger, I decided that I'd been through the boycott of 76 and the disappointment and the poisoning. And then in 1980, here we were. And so I thought I'd be free of this and go on the road race.
And of course, the ironic thing about it was, right, is the Prime Minister at the time, Sir Robert Muldoon, ironically, the following year wouldn't stop the Springboks touring New Zealand, and that's it. And it was quite double. It was probably considered as very much double standards.
Exactly. Yes.
And when you look at it, Rod, like, obviously we had some chats, like, you basically left New Zealand to go to the United States. It was hard for you to have a stable job in New Zealand and also to concentrate on running. So America became your home, you told me about some of the battles you had with the New Zealand Amateur Athletics Association.
Yeah, absolutely. They even when I fortunately I was under once I set up residency in the US, I was then under the AAU, the Athletic Union of the United States, and their rules were different than the New Zealand rules. And of course, in the early days, we were able to be compensated, but it had to go into a trust fund. And that trust fund then would reimburse you for living expenses, costs, etc. And so, but in New Zealand, of course, they tried to even, while I was over there, they even tried to control me. And they said, if you don't abide by our rules, you won't be ever competing for New Zealand again. And so I spent probably 30-40% of my time was spent protecting my rights to earn a living and to the rights to have freedom.
And, you know, well, good on you for doing that, because back in those days, you know, you looked at it and you said the Amateur Athletics Association was making a lot of money off the backs of yourself, John Walker, Dick Quacks, and a lot of our New Zealand runners through the track series. We were getting top stars. Yeah. We had Fulbert Bailly, we had Lassie Verrin, we had Eamon Coughlin from Ireland, we had Steve Scott from America come out. And there were huge crowds at Mount Smart and at QE2 Park.
Dick Quacks and Brian Allbill were the agents for putting it together. I was working for South Pacific Television and putting the program together and working with Dick Quacks and John Davies and bringing in the athletes. We worked with the Australian, Celtic, to bring those in. And then, of course, Pan Am were the sponsor of it, and South Pacific Television, they live coverage. And we really did give the sport of athletics a boost, and it still has that momentum to this day.
And it was good. It was great, and it was great TV. It was really made for TV as well. Well, you had obviously bronze in 1982 at the World Cross Country Championship, but then a certain Roy Dixon decided, bugger it, I'm going to try a marathon. You won the Auckland Marathon, and you won it by a canter, but 1983, and it really, you know, in America, and I'll say this, Rod, I probably feel that you are probably more appreciated in America, which we will go to in a moment. But I looked at that race. Yeah, Jeff Smith was basically he went to win the Boston Marathon twice, but you chased him down in 1983, and he went on to win that. And you know, it was huge. You're a superstar in America. not that you already weren't, but also when also you got the opportunity to meet President Reagan, you had everything that went with it. But that race, you had tactically thought about that race?
Oh, yes. As you say, I'd run the... I set the world record for the half marathon in 1981. And so then I decided I'd go to the World Cross Country in 82. And then I came back to New Zealand to run my first marathon. And then I must admit, when I finished it, I just thought to myself, this is it. I know that I can run a marathon. Now I've got to choose the next one. I don't think I'm going to be somebody that runs marathons every month. But I have to be very selective to the course and make sure that I prepare it properly. And so I went and London Marathon took me around their course, San Francisco, Boston. Where else did we go to? Once I drove round at 5 o'clock in the morning at the New York City Marathon with race director Fred LeBeau, I knew then that this course was going to be my course. It was just perfectly made for me, or I was made for it. And so what I knew then is that I had to go into training. And I knew that I had to at least apply 25 weeks of focused training towards running that marathon. And day by day, it was day by day. Went back to Pennsylvania. I used to run out and through the Amish country. It was just unbelievable training. And when I was doing my schedule and doing my diary, it was like I was climbing Mount Everest. And of course, I was inspired by Sir Edmund Hillary when he came to my school. So all the dots were starting to connect. It was just amazing.
Yeah, and of course, I'll have a chat to you in a moment about your visit to Sir Ed Hillary. I was supposed to mention that, but you won that, and you know, like you also had Pan Am put your face on their airlines. Apparently, you were offered an open free ticket to anywhere in the world, first class.
Well, I had a self-write card that I could go in those days, of course, they wrote down the tickets, and you could put the card in the machine and go zip zap, and she'd look at it and go, oh, okay, so you're a VIP section one. I could go and get on a plane whenever I wanted, wherever I wanted in the world that Pan Am flew. Just incredible.
And you got to represent New Zealand again at the Olympics in sweltering heat. You finished 10th, and really when we looked at that Olympics, it was like the conditions were, they were absolutely human. It was kind of like Auckland, except for 100% worse. And when you looked at it, like Carlos Lopez, the great Portuguese athlete, won it. John Tracy, I think, was second, but, yes. You know... Yes. Obviously, injury caught up, but you kept yourself involved. Like, I read a story how you helped, I think it was a blind runner. You guided a blind runner when you...
Very good.
I think it was the San Francisco Bay to Bay race.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Legendary Tom Sullivan, who worked with Morgan Mindy, Robin Williams for 3 years. Tom was just absolutely, and it still is, just incredible. What I realized is that Tom was very, very capable of running. And we ran that race together, the Bay of Bakers, and it was just like, I mean, he just stayed on my left side and I would lean into him to take him left, or he would lean into me, I would lean right and he would follow me. It was just incredible to run with him. And, you know, and we ran very, very close to a world record for blind runners. And that was over the hills of San Francisco. Just absolutely incredible guy.
Absolutely. And then 1985, was it NBC doing the commentary for for the New York Marathon.
ABC.
So they came up with an idea to actually have a GoPro camera, and then they said, we need somebody to just keep up with them. And, of course, they found a person that could run a four-minute mile to at least keep up with the runners, and his name was Rod Dixon. You were part of that modern technology going forward.
Yes, well, that was before GoPro. I think we were the first. There was they had the idea. I mean, the idea came from the horse racing at the where the lead the camera went out on the horse with the person and interviewed the winner of the race and. ABC got the idea that they should have a camera that goes on a runner in the lead pack, because although they've got vehicles and cameras around, but what does it look like from a runner's point of view, from running in with the group of runners? And so they interviewed quite a few people, but of course they had to come to me, and they said, well, you know, you're probably the only one that would be able to keep up with them and hold your head steady. So, of course, the camera was on a helmet cam and a battery pack around my waist, and I think that all weighed about 12 or 13 pounds. And then, of course, I had to run 5 minute mile pace and give commentary. So we did some tests in Central Park, and we got it figured out. We got it figured out pretty well. And then during the race, I would run 2 mile with them, and then I'd get on the back of a motorbike, and he would take me ahead, and then I would jump back in the race again. So there was going to be about 5 or 6 2-mile runs.
Wow. And, of course, you stayed on in America for a number of years. I'll make the old adage, you know, like they always say Alan P, world-famous in New Zealand. Well, Rod Dixon was probably more world-famous in the United States, especially around track and field, because you're a commentator, you coached, you gave you're a great analyst. And then you decided to return back to New Zealand. And what was the reason to return back for?
Well, I had been working with the Round the Bays event in San Francisco, and I worked, of course, with the City of Los Angeles Marathon the first years, working with the training and coaching, and I was a vice president of the City of Los Angeles Marathon. And then I got an offer to come back to New Zealand to do the Sovereign Mile Series and the Round the Bays run. And I was fascinated because the Round the Bays run could be a sister event of the San Francisco Bay to Breakers and the City to Surf in Australia. And so that was my mission, is to have the Triple Crown. And so that if any one runner could win all three, there was a $100,000 first prize. And so that was the goal, and away we went. And we really did. And also, too, I've got to say to the people that the Round the Bays was the very first athletic or very first public event, running event, to include wheelchair athletes and disabled runners. And that was a huge thing, to be able to get the roads closed so that they had equal opportunity to participate. And we brought out some great wheelchair athletes that had won world championships, and they inspired this country, and from that, the wheelchair parafed were involved in public events.
Absolutely. Well, I look at what you've given back since you've come back to New Zealand, and you've given back a lot. I'm going to cast your mind to a memory when you won a bronze medal, because you've been so inspired by Sir Edmund Hillary. You knocked on his door, and he congratulations, young man, but he gave you a bit of advice to keep on basically passing on what you can to others, and especially the youth. And you're doing it now with the Marathon for Kids. You're very proactive and disability, helping disability athletes. And, you know, Rod, I think it's well deserved that you've received this honour.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, that's, and we're setting up the Kids Marathon New Zealand charity, and that gives hopefully opportunity for all the decile 1, 2 and 3 schools in New Zealand for kids to participate. And of course, we're working with people like The Spectacle, Julian Matthews, to have the kids come to run the mile in the in their event. All the kids get a medal. I don't leave any kid left behind. Finishing is winning. Winning is finishing. And the kids get a replica medal of my Olympic medal. And I meet kids 10 years later, and they still show me their medal and say, that was inspiration to do what I'm doing today. So I know that what Sir Edmund asked me to do is returning a tenfold.
It certainly is. Well, Rod, I always enjoy... Oh, I enjoyed this chat today. I always enjoy our chats, actually, Rod. We actually have, you know, we talk, it brings back a lot of memories, and I have to say, hopefully, in the next 5 years, they call you Sir Rod. I'll be able to call you Sir Rod.
Well, I feel funny because I called Scott Dixon. I said, I think they've got the knighthood mixed up.
Well, you can imagine yourself, another Sir Rod, yourself and Sir Rod Stewart there. That's an interesting combination.
Yeah, well, it's true too. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. Rod, thank you so much for making yourself available. Thoroughly enjoyed it, this chat. And it's not an interview, it's a chat. I'll ask you, and that's what it all should be all about. So have a great 2026, Rod. Cheers, mate. Rod Dixon, absolutely fantastic. Well, next up, we've got Jamie Roberts on the darts.
And if you want these kind of dreams, it's Californication. It's the edge of the world in all of Western civilization. The sun may rise in the east, at least it's settled in a final location. It's understood that Hollywood sells Californication. Hey, I'll Sergeant Barrow, while it breaks the spell of aging. Celebrity skin, is this your chin or is that warrior waging? Firstborn unicorn.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Well, the World Darts Championship's going on. Okay, so we're just going to have a quick update, and of course joining us is our Mr. Darts himself, Jamie Roberts. Good morning to you and Happy New Year, mate.
Good morning, mate. Good morning. And a blistering 117 checkout from Gian Van Veen just to tie up the sets with Gary Anderson in the semi-final, mate. Wow. What a morning.
Wow, what a morning. And, of course, it started off Luke Littler versus Seal. And Littler, wow, what a player he is. 6-1.
Yeah. Oh, just incredible. He's into his third World Championship final. In a row, and he dropped the first set against Searle this morning, but it just never looked like anyone it was going to be bothered or anything from that. He just went on and ploughed through another 105 average, and he looks to be the man to beat again.
He certainly does, and when Searle won the first set, I thought, well, that could be interesting, and he's had a lot of a lot of the crowd are against him, but he's just putting the two finger salute to them all the time, just with his darts.
Yeah, the crowd better pay in his wages, like he kindly expressed on stage the other night, right? He's always under the cosh. There was a big, I think there was a lot of Germans still in the crowd that don't really fancy him. He didn't really enjoy going to the World Cup this year with Luke Humphreys when they lost to the Germans. So it's he's openly come out and said that he doesn't really like going there. But we'll see what happens next year or this year. Yeah.
And when you look at it, like he's 18 years of age. He's going to be 19 in a few weeks' time. The guy's heading towards his third World Championship final. And when we look at what he has done so far, he has just been absolutely fantastic. He has been the most consistent player in the world. He's obviously getting a bit of jip on some things, but when we look at it, he certainly has he stood up every time. For Searle, his best performance at a World Championship, but this game being played now, Anderson versus Van der Veen. Whoa, I have to say, my heart really goes, and I think a lot of people want to see, they've got this sort of fairy tale ending to sort of Gary Anderson's career. He has had so much in the last happened in the last 12 months, but I think everybody wants him to win. But Gian Van der Veen, now I have to say, I spoke to you a few days ago and I said, watch him.
Yeah.
And he is the guy that can act, if anyone's capable of beating Luke Littler at the Ali Pally in the World Championship final, it's got to be Van der Veen.
Yeah, I've said that kind of coming into these semi-finals. My heart's saying Gary's going to win the semi-final, but also, I think for the person to put the most pressure on Littler in the final would have to be Gian Van Veen, especially after beating Luke Humphreys. And it'll be interesting to see how the rest of this game goes. And they're just hammering the boards, aren't they? They're just, ton plus averages the whole time. I think the last set average was around about 115 for Gian. It's just ridiculous what these guys can do up there. And Gian, he's only 23 himself. He won his first major earlier this year against Luke Humphreys in the final. So he's had a real decent year, and we'll see him pop up in the Premier League this year as well, which is going to make his career a lot better as well.
Well, I can just see he's just won the first league, and I'm just looking at some of the comments coming from the BBC website. Wayne Marty is saying Gian Van Veen hasn't got an ounce of panic in him. He's strolling off the stage. This is how confident this guy is. And when we look at it, he didn't just beat Humphreys; he destroyed him. And Littler and Van Veen have really got a great rivalry going back to the World Youth Darts Championship.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And look, it's going to be another one of those that probably continues for the next few years. You know, it's especially with him going now up to number three in the world, knocking Michael Van Gerwen down to four, which is the first time, you know, that's the first time there's been someone higher in the Dutch ranking since 2012. So it's really, it's all on. It's actually going to be such an exciting year of darts because of what's happened at these world champs.
Yeah, and I think we are looking at the new era. I think, you know, it is going to be the Littlers, the Humphreys, the Van Veens that are going to be coming through, maybe the Searles, and this is the changing face of darts. And you know, we look forward to another year of darts. Obviously, you've got a few competitions in the new year, have you, Jamie?
Yeah, our first one's on the 17th of January coming up, just at the Birkenhead RSA. It's an open competition for all levels. We'll get a few of the top guys come along, I imagine, and then guys that have never played before as well, bringing them together. It's always a great day. So looking forward to that. Planning's been going well. And, 2 weeks away to that, 17th of January.
Now, have you got a useless of the useless section? Because I might enter that.
There's always the bar to go to, mate. You know, Guinness on tap. You know, there's always that section you can go and join.
Oh, okay. So not only are you saying that I couldn't even make the most useless of the venues, you're just saying the best effort you can make at darts is go to the bar. Cheers, Jamie.
You'll be right. Everyone has fun. But no, locally we're going to have a good competition as well. We've got Hopai Puha. He's finished his 2-year tour card over in the PDC. He's back. He will be ready to go for another year. There's plenty to play for locally. You know, we're going to have a really strong competition now with the likes of Johnny Tata, your Ben Robs, your Hopais, your John Hurrens. You know, those guys are really going to make it a really interesting year for each other because someone's going to be missing out on, you know, the Ali Pali spot at the end of the year, and also perhaps TV spots in August when the pros come over.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll leave it to you. You probably want to get back to the starts semi. Have a good rest of 2026. I've got no doubt we will be chatting again. Catch you later, Jamie.
All right. See
Cheers.
You, mate.
Bye. Jamie Roberts. Yeah, the comment about me being absolute, I suppose I'm better at the bar than I am on the dartboard. Anyway, let's play a bit of music and we'll get Seamus Martin up next.
He's fell away with nothing to show, and the walls kept tumbling down in the city that we love. Great clouds all over the hills, bringing darkness from above. But if you close your eyes, does it almost feel like nothing changed at all? And if you close your eyes, does it almost feel like you've been here before? How I'm beginning to be an optimist about this. How I'm beginning to be an optimist about this. We were caught up and lost in all of our vices. In your pose as the dust settled around us, and the walls kept tumbling down in the city that we love. Great clouds roll over the hills, bringing darkness from above. But if you close your eyes, does it almost feel like nothing changed at all? And if you close your eyes, does it almost feel like you've been here before? How I'm beginning to be an optimist about this. How I'm beginning to be an optimist about this. Where do we begin? The rubble or our sins? Oh, where do we begin? The rubble or our sins? And the walls kept tumbling down in the city that we love.
this world. But if you close your eyes, does it almost feel like nothing changed at all? And if you close your eyes, does it almost...
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend, and I've just got to... And I forgot to do a couple of... I'll be doing the next segment. I will be getting out the Force Electrical and Douglas Drainage ads and Water Smart. So I do apologise to them. Anyway, big shout out to Robert Thompson from Barford and Thompson. Looking to buy, looking to sell, looking to get on that Auckland property market. Give Robert a call. His number is 021-737-949. Or you can email him r.thompson, that's Thompson with a P, at barfords.co.nz. And wow, first wheel, we're back for the year and he's back again for another year from Between Two Bears podcast. Mr. Seamus Martin, good morning and happy new year to you, mate.
Good morning, happy new year. What a great time of year it is to enjoy a bit of football, isn't it? It's just wall to wall at the moment.
Oh, mate. I can tell you something. I've been doing this show for 5 years, just over 5 years, coming into my 6th year. We did have a bit of break between COVID was on, but football is the gift that keeps on giving. It's like
Christmas. There's no time better.
Yeah, because as soon as you think it's over, then you've got internationals, then you've got an international tournament. So things keep moving and moving and moving. And I have to say, we're going to kick it off with the A-League. Well, Auckland FC won, Newcastle Jets 3. When some of my observations there, Seamus, was there was a real lack of penetration into that box. Credit's got to be given to Newcastle to the Newcastle defence. They had a player sent off, but when we looked at it, and Newcastle should be credited with that one, because between me and you, I felt their defence was absolutely outstanding. They played outstanding. It just seems that they really crowded us in that box.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're spot on to give Newcastle their credit for that. That was a result which was built off one of their strengths, which is the start. I mean, two goals, it was 2-1, wasn't it, with 20 minutes to play, and then they go down to 10 men. So, you know, they've got a blueprint of the way they like to come out and attack teams. It's the second time at Go Media Stadium they've done this to Auckland FC. I think the only team to have beaten Auckland FC twice now is Newcastle Jets. And Mark Milligan, their coach, has got Steve Corica's number for sure. But once they went down to 10 men, and we saw this the other way around, didn't we, in the derby when Auckland were reduced to 9 men with Dan Hall and Logan Rogerson sent off, and Wellington couldn't find a way through. And it's often the case, isn't it, when a team is down that numerical advantage, they just condense, they drop right back, and it becomes very hard to penetrate between the lines. Now, what Auckland didn't do, in my opinion, and you've identified it, is they didn't seem to have a plan B. They just looked to lump it into the box to try and find Cosgrove. And, when he's crowded by 3 or 4 defenders, it just didn't seem to be working. And in my opinion, I thought maybe the ball speed was just a little bit slow. They weren't able to shift the players of Newcastle around to try and create the gaps to try and penetrate into the box, as you say. And it just didn't happen. And even when Corica made the changes and brought the subs on, none of those subs seemed to really change the face or the dynamic of the game. So it was a really frustrating afternoon. If you were an Auckland FC fan, they're still top of the table. They've got 2 points on Sydney. Sydney have got a game in hand, so that might not last beyond this weekend. But, just not the same Auckland FC that we saw last year, is it? They had an air of invincibility. They had an air of inevitability that you'd think they would find a way to win a game. But I think Corica said post-match in his interview they could have probably played all afternoon, and it just didn't look like they were ever going to score a goal.
I think they missed Jake Brimmer a bit. Jake Brimmer was a big loss, and I think he's a huge organiser of that midfield, Seamus. He certainly is, yeah. Obviously, we come into the January transfer window. Do you see any mid-season signings?
I think it's really hard because the A-League for me is a league where you're not going to buy someone out of a contract. There just isn't the same sort of money around.
Not with the salary cap restrictions as well, too.
Exactly right. So you're probably looking for someone who's off contract. The only name I can think of that is unattached currently is a guy like Bill Tuiloma. Yep. Now, he might be a great signing for Auckland FC to come in and shore up the defence, but I don't think defence is where the problems are. I think for me, they need a variation to Sam Cosgrove. Max Mutter would have been an interesting signing, but of course he's gone back to the League of Ireland. So, you know, he was really successful for them last year. But, look, I may be a playmaker or a number 10 because, you know, in my opinion, Guillermo Mai is well below the high standards he set for himself after his inaugural season last year. He was excellent last year, player of the year, in my opinion, and also awarded by the club. But he just seems to be a shadow of himself. I don't know whether that knee injury that he's picked up is still bothering him, but you talk about Brimmer being influential. I talk about Guillermo Mai as one of those players that can unlock a defence or have a moment of magic, and we just haven't seen any of those moments of magic that we were so used to seeing last year.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we go to the Phoenix versus Aurora in Brisbane. Well, Phoenix drubbing 5-1 against Melbourne Victory, and really, this one's a tough one for the Phoenix men's.
Oh, look, Brisbane Roar are a team that you probably don't want to come up against when you are in a bit of a rut because they've got that combative nature. You know, that they're not going to take a step back. They're in it for a fight. They're going to be a really difficult opponent today. One of the most worrying things, I think, for me is in that Phoenix defeat against the Victory was Alex Rufa limping off and joining that long list of injured players that Giancarlo Italiano is unable to call on. I haven't seen how long an injury it is. I haven't seen if he's unavailable for selection today. But if he's not in that team, he, for me, is by far and away their most influential player. If they lose his leadership, but also his calming influence in the middle of the park, I think it could be a really difficult afternoon for Wellington. Playing at Redcliffe, I've seen the social media. It looks like it's going to be a sellout. So it's away from Suncorp Stadium. Excuse me, away from Suncorp Stadium, down at or up at Redcliffe. So it's going to be a packed house, a double header. Don't forget. So the Wellington Phoenix women,
yes,
at the moment, are the real bright spark, aren't they?
They are on a fantastic run. And
they're my pick to watch at the moment. It's appointment viewing for me every time Bev Priestman's side is in action. 10 goals over 2 games, they are in phenomenal form.
Yeah, and when we look at it, Seamus, like a few weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago, we were saying, well, there was so much hype on this Phoenix side and so much hype around Bev Priestman. Well, you know, the hype is really coming to the fore. You know, we looked at that display against Sydney. We looked at that display against West Sydney. Obviously, West Sydney, bottom of the table, sort of expected, but this one, it's 5th versus 6th or 6th versus 7th, but if the Phoenix were to win this, they go as up as high as 3rd on the table, potentially.
Yeah, a couple of slices of humble pie being eaten around the table, weren't they, for people that suggested maybe it was, like myself, who suggested the hype hadn't been met. But look, it's a bedding in process, isn't it? A new coach comes in, new players, new style of playing. Of course, they're going to need a little bit of time. Today will be a really good test to see where they're really at. You rightly point out Western Sydney bottom of the table. That's a result you expect to have happen if you go across there. Sydney, then they proved that Sydney result, that 7-0, wasn't a blip, wasn't it? Well, today is a chance for them to really emphasise. One of the great things I've been seeing is these Nepalese fans that are there supporting Samba across in Australia. She's an absolute phenomenon, isn't she? Fantastic for the league. I think they had 1,500 people at Western Sydney Warriors, Western Sydney Wanderers, I should say, which is almost unheard of for an A-League women's match for Western Sydney, bottom of the table, to have a sellout like that. So, look, I'm sure there's a Nepalese community in Queensland that'll be making their way to Redcliffe today. And out of the the double header, I think that women's game is probably the one to watch. I think that's the one that'll be a really entertaining spectacle from the men's perspective a little bit later on today. I think it's a case of damage limitation. If the Phoenix can come away with a point from that game, that'll be a really big achievement. They beat Brisbane Roar earlier in the season in round 2. A little bit of controversy around that, around Eze and a potential foul, could have been a red card, that wasn't given. So I think the Roar will have a little bit of revenge on their mind when they take on Wellington later on this evening.
Absolutely. Well, we have a look at the year for New Zealand football ahead, and it's a huge year happening around in New Zealand. Obviously, we'll have our Northern and we'll have our National Leagues at the end of the year. Next week, we're going to have a preview of the OFC Pro League, which starts in a couple of weeks' time at Eden Park, where we have two New Zealand teams with Auckland FC and South Island United. Then we've got the OFC Champions League, which will be represented by Auckland City FC. Now this is not the direct, and you can no longer go through this to go to the Club World Cup final. It has to be through the Pro League. We've got internationals in March. We've got an international series here in New Zealand. We have Finland, we have Chile, we have Cape Fear here, and then we've got, of course, the White Ferns have some qualifiers. Then we go to the big one, the big daddy of them all, the World Cup in June. It's just so much going on in football in New Zealand at the moment, Seamus.
Well, you're right. Look, I talked about the festive season being a real bonanza for football and being able to watch wall-to-wall games. The way you lay it out there, look, it doesn't stop, does it? You're right into exciting times. I think for me, I'm really looking forward to profiling this OFC Pro League next week. I think that's a really interesting addition to the football calendar. I've seen some of the signings that are coming through. Yeah. I think it's wonderful to see some of the young New Zealand talent being picked up by some of these teams that are based in the Pacific Islands. I think that's a really good thing for football in the Confederation, and I think it's a really good thing for some of these players to go and experience new environments, pick up new, see new things, new tactics, new styles. I can only see nothing but positives for this, for football, for the OFC Pro League coming in, not just for New Zealand, but also for the wider Oceania Confederation, because a strong Oceania means a strong New Zealand football. I think there's been a little period of time where New Zealand has really been head and shoulders above the rest of the Confederation, but I think a competition like this will start to see that gap slightly close, which means New Zealand need to innovate and need to adapt to stay ahead. The big one on the horizon is the World Cup, isn't it, later on this year? Oh. That international series that we host here in March, it's going to be a really festive feeling for football fans to send this team off on a positive note, yeah, isn't it?
I suspect that may be minus Chris Wood on this one. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, look. I think that social media post that he put up, I think it was on Boxing Day or just before New Year, perhaps, of him recovering after knee surgery. I think that was him signalling to football fans here in New Zealand that perhaps they won't expect to see him on the pitch in March. I suspect if he's able to get away from Nottingham Forest, that New Zealand football will be desperate for him to come down here and promo work for the All Whites team as they look to head to North America in the middle of the year. So as you rightly point out, look, let's not forget the Northern League, the Central League and the Southern League as well. Yes, there's no FIFA Club World Cup carrot on the line for Auckland City, but there is still the FIFA Intercontinental Club Cup, which is played every year. We saw them travel over to Egypt late last year to play in that. So still an international carrot for some of those players. But equally, it's great to see some of those players that have shown up for Auckland City, for Miramar, for Wellington Olympic, start to pop up and pick up contracts in this Pro League, which shows that the pathway to professional football, is really still there. You talk about the Football Ferns with their World Cup qualifying path starting in the Solomon Islands in March. The first steps to the World Cup in Brazil in 2027 get taken this year as well. So, look, fantastic stuff happening locally. And I can't wait for the club season to kick off, if I'm being honest. Wow. Melbourne United back in the Northern League. I get to talk about my home club every week and the fortunes of how they're going, which is excellent for me.
Anyway, we go to the EPL picks, and we started off Sunday's game. Aston Villa versus Nottingham Forest, Brighton versus Burnley, Wolves versus West Ham. Be careful here, Seamus. There's a West Ham target on you. Big Daddy, Sugar Daddy, Bills, AFC Bournemouth versus Arsenal. So we start off Villa versus Forest.
Yeah, look, there was a lot of chatter on Aston Villa and Arsenal, wasn't there, midweek, about maybe is this Villa's chance to close the gap on Arsenal. The team currently in first place, Arsenal, really put Aston Villa to the sword. So I expect the Villains to bounce back against Nottingham Forest and to win that game at home at Villa Park. I think moving on to that Brighton versus Burnley game, I think Burnley coming away with a battling point midweek. I think Brighton will be too strong there, so I'm going to tip the home team Brighton to beat Burnley. Good news for West Ham fans. I'm picking them to win. St. Wolves are on track to have the most disappointing campaign in English Premier League history to overtake Derby, I think, who finished the season on 5 points, Wolves on 2 points, and geez, they just can't buy a trick at the moment. So West Ham fans, you'll be happy to hear I am tipping you to win this week in that bottom of the table clash against Wolves. And look, AFC Bournemouth, they are movers and shakers. They are having a good season, but geez, this Arsenal juggernaut, I think they should start putting the red and the white ribbons around the Premier League trophy right now, because I can't see anyone pulling them back at the moment. It's Arsenal winning that one for me.
Absolutely. And then we go to Monday. So we'll do the first three games. Leeds and first United versus Manchester United. Fulham versus Liverpool. Tottenham Hotspur versus Sunderland. Well, Leeds versus Manchester United. Oh, God, don't even get me started on every time they look like this is so good. They're potentially going to make top four. They draw against Wolves. This one, I can see nothing but a nil-all draw all over it.
Yeah, look, Leeds were great against Liverpool. Unfortunately, for my team, Liverpool midweek as well, it was a horrible performance from the Reds at home. But Leeds were excellent, battling for a point. Four out of their five home games, they've won Leeds. So I'm actually going to tip Leeds to take 3 points over the Red Devils. Sorry, Eamon and the Manchester United fans, but I'll even the ledger because I'm going to tip Fulham to beat my Liverpool. I never thought I'd say it, but Fulham have been a bit of a bogey team for Liverpool in the past. Down at Craven Cottage, that Liverpool team, that performance on New Year's Day against Leeds was abysmal. No attacking intent, no fluidity. I think Fulham take the points there. And Sunderland are my team. They're my new darlings. Last year it was Nottingham Forest. I think Sunderland will beat Spurs. They were excellent in the nil-all draw against Manchester City, and I think they're going to go down to London and heap more pressure on Thomas Frank for Tottenham Hotspur.
And then their final three games, Everton versus Brentford, Newcastle versus Crystal Palace, Manchester City versus Chelsea. Chelsea have sacked their coach, so that's going to be interesting. Start off Everton, Brentford. What do you reckon, Seamus?
Draw. I've got to get a draw in there sometime this week. So I'm going to put that one. Everton versus Brentford for me. Sit on the fence and call that one a draw. Newcastle versus Crystal Palace. I watched a bit of that Crystal Palace Fulham game the other day. Finished in a draw, 1-1. I think that one probably, let's say, honors even. I'm going to tip a second draw in the round for that one. And Chelsea without a manager, they'd have a caretaker coach in place against Man City. Man City, we disappointed with that goalless draw at Sunderland, but the Stadium of Light is a difficult place to go. I just think with the uncertainty around Stamford Bridge and Chelsea, Manchester City win that game at home.
Well, young fella, will you enjoy the rest of your day? We'll catch up next week. And I must admit, I've got no doubt Robert Thompson, I will be passing on your address to Robert Thompson to send the Manchester United top to wee Eli.
Yeah, look, I've been poking my nose out to see whether that package has arrived yet, whether it was a gag or not. So, look, hey, Robert, if it is a gag, that's totally
no,
fine.
No, that's my fault. I haven't passed on the address, so I'll pass it on.
Well, hey, look, I was going to leave him to make his own mind up about which team he wants to support. So, look, we'll see where we get to. For all intents and purposes, my drive to get him to support Liverpool and Auckland FC don't seem to be going too well because those two teams have got the wobbles at the moment. So maybe he'll land on a Nottingham Forest or my new favourite team, Sunderland. You never know.
Absolutely. Have a good weekend, Seamus.
Man, happy new year to everyone listening as well.
Yeah, thank you, mate. Seamus Martin, brilliant. Anyway, next up, we're going to talk a bit of tennis with Jeff Simpson.
Been waiting to smile, been holding it in for a while. but don't look down.
I'm on top of the world.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Just some, I've got to catch up on a few ads. So first of all, Douglas Drainage Limited, every problem has a solution. All solutions have a cost. Minimize the cost with information and technology, and provided information with technology and research. That's what Douglas Drainage do. Their number is 0274 838 373, or you can email them Diggins, Diggin, .co.nz. Also Force Electrical, and just a bit about Force Electrical. Started in 2014 by Nick Brakovich, it's grown to be a trusted name across the wider Auckland and Northland region. The reason you should choose them is reliability and knowledge that sets them apart. They stay ahead with the latest industry standards and technology, ensuring every job is completed to the highest level of safety and quality. And what they do is that they can provide anything from residential to commercial projects, ongoing electrical maintenance, solar panel systems with inverters and battery storage, and ELV solutions. So give Force Electrical a call. Their number is 021-628-341, or Nick at forceelectrical.co.nz. Well, let's talk a bit of tennis, and here to talk to us, former ATP player, former Davis Cup captain, Jeff Simpson. Welcome back again, and Happy New Year to you.
The same to you. Hope it's going to be a good one, 2026.
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, then it kicks off all on Monday at the Auckland Tennis Centre in Stanley Street, ASB Classic Women's. We've actually really got a great field. Elena Spitalina, we have Emma Navarro, we have Arno Jovic, you know, we have wildcards like the great Venus Williams, Sloane Stephens, Monique Barry representing the New Zealand interests, unfortunately no Lulu Sun.
Yeah, we do have a good field, and it's great to see Svitolina back. I thought last year she played unbelievable, and Navarro is playing so well at the moment too. And they have, you know, players of their standard, you know, top 10 players have been in our draw. And of course Venus, you know, she's still going strong at her age. I mean, she's absolutely amazing. She's like better than Monty's because she's older, but you know, she is still playing really well, and it'll be good to see her competing out there again. Hopefully there's no wind.
Hopefully there is no one. Venus Williams, 45 years of age, been given a wild card into the Australian Open, but it's great to see Sloane Stephens making a comeback here.
Yeah, well, she's an unbelievable player, a great striker of the ball. You know, you couldn't get anybody hitting the ball cleaner than Sloane, and, you know, a US Open champion. Coming to our shores, it's great to see her back, and, you know, she can do some damage, that's for sure, if she, you know, finds her rhythm.
Absolutely, and of course, sadly, no Lulu Sun this year. So, obviously, she pulled out with an injury.
What's the injury? What's her injury?
I'll just get to that right now. Okay, I can tell you right now. I brought this up. So, they're actually not saying what it is. It's a lingering injury she's had for a while. So, so it's a shame because I think, you know, she was a big draw card last year. And of course, this year. So, in the singles, we will be represented by Monique Barry. Monique, it's an opportunity to play a top player for Monique. We've still got players in the qualifiers, but it's very, very hard to get through those qualifiers to the main draw, Jeff.
Yeah, it is. I mean, they're all at that stage. It comes down to, you know, it's the old Darwinian theory now, isn't it? You know, these players find a way to get in. They're fighting hard. You know, you got players from, you know, being a global sport, 200 countries in the world playing, and for money. And so, you know, the strongest survive, don't they? They find their way through. So the competition is hard. And so it's
So it should be, really, you know, if you think about it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, on the doubles, Erin Routledge is back, and she will be partnered by Asia Muhammad in the doubles. Be the first time these two have paired, in my knowledge. Yeah. But to me, to get someone like Erin comes back every year. Yeah. She doesn't have to. She could go to another tournament, but she comes back every year to pay respects to New Zealand tennis. I think that's a huge boost for the tournament.
It is, and, I don't know. Kind of surprised that she's not playing with her usual partner, the one two Grand Slams.
Gabby Dabrowski,
I wonder what happened. Is Gabby, are they playing the Australian Open together?
I'm not too sure on that. It'll be quite interesting to see. She probably will, but Asia Muhammad is a very, very good doubles player.
It's obviously there's a very good reason, but I mean they were such a good combination, and they sort of clicked her and Gabby right from the first, didn't they? Winning that first Grand Slam and then now backing it up again. It's pretty damn good. I don't understand, in my eyes, why they're having a break from each other.
Well, maybe have a commitment elsewhere, but I have to say that, very, very surprised. In fact, and I think the big thing she actually has split. She split a month ago, Jeff.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah, so we haven't been on to it, Jeff, because we need to talk... We haven't been onto it, but so Asia Muhammad now comes in. Erin is still ranked in the top five of doubles players. She's collected this year $1.7 million, which is great.
And now, like you said, Emma, it's great that she is making Auckland a stop for her. To have a Grand Slam champion playing doubles field, I think it's great. Doesn't matter who she's playing with. It's just to have her there out there in the court, and it's, obviously she can go elsewhere, but it's great that she's supporting the tournament. I think that's, and it's good for all our young girls to see her out there playing. She's a good role model.
She is a good role model. Looking at this tournament, Jeff, every year it turns out a surprise. Every year it punches above its weight, because we're against other tournaments where there's more prize money on offer. But Nico Lampion, he deserves a lot of credit for the recruiting he does.
Yeah, he's been a great, he's very, you don't hear much from him, but, he does a phenomenal job. He's, been able to secure some great, and both the men's and the women's. And so, as you said, both tournaments do punch above their weight, and it's all through Nico doing a great job in his recruiting ability, take my hat off to him.
Yeah, I think, every year, I think we look at sporting events, and this is the popular part of summer. Hopefully by 2027, 2028, hopefully there will be no delays due to our lovely inclement weather we have in the city of Sales, Jeff. So hopefully we have a roof on there.
Yeah, I know. We all know now what, is happening, and we've raised the money to put a roof over, which would be great. I mean, I heard that, it could be 2027, but 2028 at the latest. But, as we know, it's just, you just cannot count on the weather this time of year. And we're looking at today, we've got the qualifying starting at 11, forecast is for rain. So, that can hold things up a little bit. And that's just the perfect example for us of why we do need the roof. And, we are getting the roof, so I think that's great for Auckland tennis and great for the tournament.
And also, as I think I mentioned to you, this having that roof gives much opportunities for Auckland tennis to also look at it as an entertainment venue as well.
Oh,
too.
Yes, of course. Yeah, and the widening of the court and the run back being bigger now is that, and that enables them to get more, as you say, in the off season from tennis, it enables them to get other sports in there to perform, and the extra seating of 500 seats. It's just a big plus all round for everything. I think it'll be well maintained, because you don't have a lot in Auckland, like
like the centre that we are going to have. So I think it's a great plus for the city.
I think it's going to be fantastic. Looking at this tournament, who do you see as that clear favourite for this? Obviously, you have to go Spitalina for this.
Yeah, I think for my money, I mean, I'm being very impressed with Navarro. I mean, the way she gets on with it, and you know, she plays. She's sort of not under the radar, but you know, there's not a lot of fuss about her. She just gets on with it, and she's pretty consistent in the way she plays. And you know, she gets the ball really nice and early, and she puts a lot of pressure on her opponents. And great temperament. I think she's got a good temperament, and I would love to see, you know, it'd be nice to see, you know, a Venus Williams doing well and a Sloan Stephens, but it'd also be good to see it like we saw last year with Svitolina coming through. She played unbelievable. And, you know, somebody like Navarro, I think, you know, if we could see a final like that, it'd be great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we will talk next week, Mr. Simpson, as we look towards the final. And you enjoy the rest of the week and enjoy the tennis, Jeff.
Great. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
No problem at all. Cheers, Jeff.
Okay.
That's Jeff Simpson. So next up, we're going to go to Hawaii with Tom Selleck himself, Lee Piper.
Let me look.
Well, welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend here on Planet 104.6 FM. Listen on 104.6 FM on planetaudio.org.nz. Hope you are enjoying the show. Now, this segment is brought to you by WaterSmart. Weekend mission sorted, mate. Wash the car, rinse the boat, clean the bait station, keep the wife's tomato plants happy, all with a WaterSmart tank. No water restrictions, no worries. Different sizes to suit your property. Check out watersmart.co.nz and take control today. Well, online, live from Hawaii, he's no Tom Selleck. In fact, he's no Jack Lord. He begged and screamed that he wanted to come on the show. Mr. Lee Piper, good morning.
Yes, hello, how are you? Happy New Year. Are you well?
Well, I'm good, mate. I'm good. How was your New Year's Eve in Hawaii?
Brief. No, I'm not. They have one of the great fireworks display, but I have seen it before, so I wasn't panicking about it. But it was, it was good. I'm just currently out on the North Shore, fighting traffic, I might add. But all is good. I've come over here before. This is where you launch off to go shark diving, which unfortunately I went, and the sharks did not eat me. So I go there.
Oh, okay.
That's the go.
Well, we might as well kick it off. 2026, you know, obviously a big year ahead. We might as well look at our predictions. Super Rugby, Piper. Now, I've already spoken to Lashes. I'm back in the Crusaders to go back-to-back. And Super Rugby, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I'm not backing that. I know he fancies the Hurricanes a little bit, and there's a lot to like about them. I think it'll also depend for them on how much they can get out of Roygaard and Jordy Barrett, because without those two, I think, particularly with Roygaard out last year, they were a bit patchy. I think it's a pretty even competition. We've talked about this before. You have a look at the Highlanders last year who got last. They upset the Blues. They should have upset the Crusaders away. They got 7 bonus points from being within 7. But they just couldn't get the job done. So it just shows that competition across the board is tough. We saw Moana Pacifica knock over both the Crusaders and the Blues. Obviously, no Artie Saavedi this year. That's going to make a massive difference
to
them. And then Fiji, particularly at La Toka, are very difficult to beat. No one's beaten them there. They've got a couple of games there, but they've got a new place called Bali, which is just up a little bit from La Toka. So that might be easier for some of the teams to win up there. But look, overall, it's a pretty even competition. I think you're pretty brave to be picking it. Obviously, the Crusaders, no Scott Barrett for the chunk of that tournament, no Mwanga back for the chunk of that tournament. I go back to the places that I always like, which is how good are you in the front five and how good are you at 9 and 10? And if you're not bad there, you're going okay. And that's why I quite like the Highlanders. Not only have they got big Fabian Holland, they've got the big Argentinian lock in, so they should get plenty of ball there. And they've obviously got the new whiz kid in Dylan Pledger, along with Falau Fakatava at 9. So that's strong at 9. You could argue they're a wee bit weak at 10. Cam Miller had a good NPC, but would need to improve. So there's lots to like, I think, about lots of the teams, to be honest with you. But yeah, if I was going to pick a winner this far out, I think I'd probably lean the way of the Hurricanes.
Yeah, I'm going to back the Crusaders because between me and you, I don't think Scott Barrett's going to be that big a loss, to be honest with you. In fact, I think Scott Barrett has got a lot to think about it in his time off. With the Highlanders, I do like what they're bringing to the table, and I do like how their signings have. They're basically, they've signed some very, very good young outside backs, and, you know, if not, they will make the playoffs, Lee. But I think their year comes in 2027. I can see them being the team to watch.
Well, they'll have Josh Jacob in 27 at 10. That goes to my point before. That'll make a massive difference to them. Remember, they've got a lot of players that made that All Black 15, including Caleb Tangata, who I think should be in the All Black mix. I think that he was probably a bit hard done by it. I think he's as good a winger as he is going around. Jacob Anikib's at the back. He was good for the New Zealand 15. Jack Taylor, good. Sean Withy, good. You know, all of these young guys coming. Don't forget Tava Tavanawa got hurt in the NPC. You know, he's to come back and solidify that. Talia in the midfield as well. Nariki. So they've got plenty of firepower. Their problem is keeping everybody in the park, and that's really been their problem in the past. So, look, if they can do that, they'll be in the mix. Not a lot of word around the Chiefs.
Yeah, there isn't.
Hard to know with them. They can be a bit of a mixed bag. Remember, I thought they were lucky and unlucky last year. They got that home semi-final, but then lost. And then they should have actually, you know, relegated themselves down to the bottom and not got that home semi, which they then got, which I think was wrong. But, yeah, I don't know. It's a bit of a mixed bag. You probably, to your point, put the Crusaders with their nose in front as the defending champs. But I don't think anybody will go through without two or three or four losses. I think it's going to be pretty tight.
I can say this right now. The Blues look underwhelming. Absolutely underwhelming. And I suspect that it will be a tough year for the Blues. Moana without Artie, it could be another hard year it could be a really hard year for Moana, because not only did he lift the performance, he lifted the players randomly. Well, we look at then of course we've got the All Blacks. Well, it's a big season ahead, Lee. We've got Ireland, we've got France, we've got Italy in the Nations Cup, then the Great Rivalries Tour, 3 tests in South Africa, 1 test probably at Twickenham, and then we wrap the season up with three tests in the Nations Cup, Wales, Scotland and England, and potential playoff spots in the Nations Cup. Now, I will give you my thoughts. I think we will win the first 3 internationals in New Zealand. I think France will probably send out their best side, but, you know, New Zealand will sneak that one. They should beat Ireland, and if they struggle against Italy and Wellington, well, then we've got problems. We go to South Africa, and this is where I think the call will be interesting. Richie Mwanga isn't eligible for the All Blacks and has to play NPC. Well, don't be surprised if all of a sudden somebody gets injured and Richie Mwanga has to come in, because we haven't got anyone else to do that. But I'm backing the Springboks to win 2-1 in South Africa.
Yeah, look, there's a lot to unpack there. The challenge that Scott Robertson's got, to be fair, is he is going to have... Those players are basically going into camp now. His All Blacks won't go into camp until, I think it's about the 19th with their Super Rugby side. They start on the 13th of Feb. They've really got top-level rugby from the 13th of Feb all the way through to that end of year tour. That's a lot. He is going to go through a lot of players in that time and demand a lot from them. So their Super Rugby sides their franchises are going to want plenty out of them. So they've got to battle their way through that. Let's assume that most of those, if not all of those, New Zealand sides make the playoffs. So they're into, you know, end of May into June. Then to your point, they're going to have a couple of weeks off. But Robertson will want them in camp for that, the start of the Nations Series. Then they go to South Africa, which is touring hell. They then come out of that, and then they head off to the end of year tour, where they play the remaining teams that they didn't play in the Nations Cup, all up, you know, 17 matches, 13 tests, 4 games away. That's a lot. And for your leading players to be able to head it on from February right through, it's going to be a massive ask. I know, you know, the British Isles took 38 on the tour of Australia this year. I think we're taking at least that to South Africa.
It's
an interesting... I don't know. Sorry, are you there?
Yep, we're there. Keep talking.
So I think the South African one is an interesting one. You've got those warm-up games, runs and that, otherwise, it's just going to be how they manage.
You keep on going to a bad area there, Lee.
I'm moving. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm there. Keep talking. Keep talking now. We've lost them now. Come on, Piper. Here we are.
You're there.
Yeah, I'm there now. Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, I think it's going to be... I'm with you. I think they'll win 2-1. South Africa probably will. The biggest disappointment for me for this year was actually the game in Twickenham. I thought that was our real opportunity to capitulate the way that we did, with really seemingly no idea with what we were doing, was actually pretty tough. So, yeah, I think that's a real problem area. And I think it's going to also be what the coaching makeup for 2026 is going to be, and how much they run with, you know, Scott Robertson and make him make a change. They're going to do that. Relationship also, we've had no CEO. In fact, we've got no CEO of all of our sports, have we, with the likes of netball, cricket and rugby, probably our 3 premier sports all needing new CEOs. So it's a tough old time, but it's also a relationship between Kirk and Robertson, the new CEO coming in, who's still haven't named. That's a problem. So, you know, not a lot to like there, and a lot of challenges ahead. And then when you, to your point, you throw on that South Africa, and that makes it, you know, that's to be checked.
I think the only thing that will save Scott Robinson probably would be making that Rugby Nations Cup final as a bare minimum if he loses in South Africa. Anyway, we'll look at netball now. Obviously, some of the predictions, I think we're going to fall short in the final against Australia at the Commonwealth Games, where we're probably going to finish second, losing by a goal. Dame Nolene to step down afterwards, if she is there, and then to write a book, to write a book, and maybe forwarded by a certain Al Piper.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of non-predictions there. I actually think they'll beat Australia. I think they've got a really good seven. I think they're... when you have a look... And I tell you what will also help them here, Eamon, is the fact that a lot of their leading players are going to play in Australia in their super netball comp. So you're going to have the likes of Karen Berger. I know Jane Watson's not available, but, you know, you're going to have the likes of Karen Berger, Maddie Gordon, Grace Nowicki. So you're going to have a nice core of players playing in that competition who are going to be fronting up at the Commonwealth Games. Remember, while we lost in Australia, we were very competitive. We got better as that series went on, and I think that's due to the fact that our domestic competition isn't that great. So I think with quite a few of our players getting better competition more regularly, I think they'll come in hardened. I think there is enough of a core of that team that want to really perform for Nolene. So I think that's a great thing. And so I think if that all comes to pass, I think she wants to retire, but I think she wants to retire on a high note. So, you know, I think that's why they'll be particularly keen to do the job for her. I think on the international front, I'm going to pick them to win that, their Commonwealth Games gold medal, but England are going to be tough as well. Their premier competition over there is top rate. They're adding teams in to it, and they're allowing a lot more inputs into that as well. So, you know, it's going to be a good comp, but I'm going to pick the Ferns to win that. Domestically, I'm going to pick the Steel to win it this year. I think with the movements around, the tactics have been stripped. Probably the Mystics, or the Stars actually have done pretty good. I think the Mystics, the Stars, and the Steel will be in the finals there. I'm going to pick the Steel to win it. I like the core of their side. Although Kate Heffernan has gone over to Australia, which will help the Silver Ferns. They've still got Georgia Heffernan. They've got Aaliyah Dunn, so they've got a good shooting circle. They've got Carrie Scythe at the back, and Kimmy Poy in the midcourt. I think they're pretty strong, so that's what I think will happen there.
Yeah, and when I look at it, what about Dame Nolene writing a book at the end of the year to come out at Christmas? I reckon I'm on the money there, Pipes.
Well, I'm not sure if she'll write a book, but she'll definitely come out for some exclusive interviews, which will be a lot more telling than what she's done. Like, she got wrapped over the knuckles for what she said, for what she said when she was reappointed, that she'd gone too far. So you can imagine when she's let off the dogs let off the leash there. But not surprising, I'm not sure whether we got this stuck in 2025, but, you know, as we predicted, I predicted she would go at the beginning of the year. She went at the end of the year with Jen Wiley going. So that's also going to help, I think, settle things down, which was the only place they could really go, which was, you know, make a change at that top. It'll be interesting to see what they do now and see if some of those elected board members are thrown out by the associations and if that makes any kind of difference. But they need to get that sport back on even keel and quickly.
So you've been in America. Big thing, what's been the big thing happening in American sports? Obviously, NFL as we head towards the playoffs.
Yeah, that's been massive. The NFL, even in Hawaii, they pack the bars. You can't bet over here in Hawaii. It's a non-betting state.
That's going to stuff you up, isn't it?
It doesn't suit me at all. So that makes life a wee bit tricky. But, yeah, no, NFL, and obviously the NBA, but the NFL is big. They call it the Sugar Bowl, but I don't think it's actually called that, but it's the equivalent.
Yeah. The Aloha Bowl is the Aloha Bowl. And we're lost. Yep.
21.
Yep. You might have to move to another location, Piper. We're losing
you.
Okay,
well,
no. We've got.
Am I back now?
Yeah, you're back now. I can't believe Hawaii. Yeah. You know, cell coverage in Hawaii. It's appalling.
It's over.
Yeah, I know. It's over. Yeah, you're back again. Okay, yeah. So, but looking at it, like the Aloha Bowl, that's about 50,000 or 60,000 people there.
Yeah, well, they're just working on the Aloha Stadium, which is their big stadium. It's under a refit, so they're looking at putting that back in. So, as in, you know, doing that back up. So they've been playing in some of the states, but it's not really a sporting mecca. They've got the Sony Open coming up in the Gulf in a couple of weeks, and you know, there was a report in the paper here the other week about whether they were going to be able to keep the status of that. That's their only PGA event. And it's kind of you don't get the real big names coming out unless they're sort of coming out for a holiday over the season. But they're interested in sport, but you know, unlike when I talked to you from New York, where you know it's a whole different kettle of fish there.
Oh, yeah.
You've got the NBA, you've got the Knicks, you've got the Giants, you've got the Yankees, you've got the Mets. You know, like it's a whole different kettle of fish over here. It's college, and they're mainly in those colleges they get picked up and drafted into the bigger NFL teams. But seems to be a lot of support over here for the Philadelphia Eagles, which obviously big match. And in fact, there's a big match on here, or in the NFL, not here, but tomorrow. Obviously, I think the 49ers are taking on the Seahawks to decide who goes through as the number one seed. So plenty of interest and plenty of coverage.
Yeah, well, that's huge over here. That is absolutely huge. That's going to be a huge game. Also, when you look at it, you mentioned the golf tournament. Is Dinner Foxy's playing on that one?
No, he's not. I think he takes a break. So.
Oh, yeah. Damn it. Anyway, we might as well rattle on. We've got the Ashes up soon, and of course then, you know, hopefully the test, it goes on for at least, three and a half days.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see that you had Jim Maxwell on the show and promoting that yesterday, the doyen of Australian cricket commentary. Yeah. I don't know what your view is around this baseball. You've got to be good enough to play it, and that's the problem I think that he's got, is that they're just not good enough, unfortunately, at the moment, the English, and so that's making life pretty tough for them. So, yeah, I think I wouldn't be surprised if England roll Australia. Australia are not that good, and particularly without Pat Cummings on their side, you can see that they've started to struggle. I see. Kawhi just decided to retire. Well, look, Travis Head's been a revelation for Australia at the top of the order, so that's gone well. But Marcus Lachenstein has been out of form. Their bowling attacks look okay. Bowlers actually look the best of their bowlers, and Stark's obviously good at the top there as well. But they're not the absolute rock star team that they've been in the past. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be interesting to see how that final test plays out. But it's been a pretty average series, hasn't it? Really, to your point, it's been over that fast and that quickly that. You know, it's really, once 3-1, 3-0 up, sure they won their first game in about 15 years in Australia, but, you know, after the excitement of the build-up for it and everybody, including Baz, saying they've never been better prepared to come up with what they've come up with, has been pretty average.
It has been pretty average, and when you look at it, like, when I spoke to Jim this morning, one of the points I said to him is, this Australian side is an aging Australian side, and you look at India now, they're in rebuild. You look at Australia, will have to go into rebuild. England will probably, Baz won't be the head coach of the test side, they'll keep him for the white ball, and then New Zealand, obviously we're going to go for a rebuilding stage. Obviously Williamson likely to step down maybe at the end of next year. But I look at the best side in Test cricket at the moment, and it's probably South Africa by a country mile.
Yeah, the problem is it's hard to tell, because when you have a look at that Test table, we're right up the top, but we haven't actually played anyone. But we've only played the West Indies, who are sort of right down the bottom. So it depends on who you play. So India, Australia and South Africa and England kind of shag themselves in the end, because they play each other more because they want the crowds, but they're more likely to not get the point. So, you know, but New Zealand's got a big cricketing year coming up. I think we're away to India, we're away to England. I think we finished the year against Australia, so that'll be the tail of the tape for us. But, you know, we've got a pretty settled side across all three formats. It's just we're aging a little bit as well. We've got Conway and Latham up the top. We've got Williamson, who's on a kind of a game-by-game basis. Mm. So, you know, we're not without our troubles. I think one of the pleasing things has been the emergence of our fast bowling with the likes of Jacob Duffy, who's really been in sensational form for New Zealand, who's spent a lot of time, you know, waiting for a Matt Henry or a Bolt or a Southee or a Wagner to get injured to get a run. You know, he's spearheading that attack. remember, there's no Kyle Jamieson, there was no Will O'Rourke, and I really rate O'Rourke. There's no Ben Sears. We had Nathan Smith getting injured as well. So, you know, lots of players, you know, didn't play in that West Indian series. So lots to like, I think, about New Zealand cricket. And I think, you know, we just need more cricket. We like it. We love it. We're just fed this diet of 2020 or T20 all the time, and it just gets tiresome.
Well, I tell you what, Piper, you missed out on the New Year's honours. I missed that again.
I can't believe that.
Yeah, I know. You know, they give it to, you know, anyone, I suppose. It was bloke down and your mate down in Dunedin gets one, so, you know. But I have to say, I spoke to Rod Dixon. No, I did not take your advice on asking him the question which you asked me to ask him, but no, great interview with Rod Dixon. God, well deserved. But Scott Dixon says Scott Dixon. Yeah, I suppose that's where it is. Generally, some people, you know, I can say actually deserved it. And so, yeah, so I might as well...
I'll tell you my parting shot on that.
Yeah.
I think people that get honours should be people that have actually given service. I don't believe in people getting it for doing their job, you know, and you get sort of, you know, like guys get it for services to broadcasting or services to media. Well, effectively, they've got paid to do it. I think people that do great jobs for their community or for their country or serve in their country or, you know, you see great people and communities raising money or looking after the disabled or the less fortunate or building hospitals or doctors who are creating new medicines. Those are the people I believe that, you know, deserve it. Or even in our major sport of rugby, I could name 10 guys that don't get awarded Queen's Birthday or New Year's honours that pound the rugby fields on Saturdays for their local rugby club, plotting out flags, you know, in the morning, making sure kids are playing sport on a Saturday. Those are the real people that, in my view, deserve New Year's and Queen's Birthday or King's Birthday honours, not people get paid to do what they're doing.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, Lee, we'll leave it there. Enjoy the rest of your holiday.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers. Anyway, we're just coming towards the end of the show. Obviously, New Year, we started off with one less friend, one less mate. Clive Green, Buddha as he was known to a lot of us, was a dear friend to me, dear friend to a lot of people, to Geraldine, Brianna, Jackie, Jamie, Gavin and Julie and grandkids, nieces and nephews, to Heather, his mum. We really lost someone special. He was a real good person. I'll leave you with this one.
The road is long, with a many winding tongue that leads us to knows where, who knows where. But I'm strong enough to carry him. He ain't heavy. So on we go.